So I've got six kids. The other day I was driving home with my three-year-old and he loves to cook with me. I don't know if you've ever tried to cook with a three-year-old, but it is not easy. So usually I'm like trying to get him away. Like, no, daddy's got to do this by himself. But you know, for some reason in my heart that day, I was just like, you know what? The kid loves to cook with me. So he goes, we're driving. He goes, daddy, can I cook with you when we get home? And I said, you know what? You can cook with me. And he goes, yes! Thank you, Daddy. I love you. I love cooking with you. And like, it just melted my heart. I was like, oh man, I'm a good dad. I'm a really good dad, you know? So we got home and I'm putting the groceries away. And like a lot of boys, when he gets in the house, like his shirt comes off, his socks come off. And we were lucky the pants stayed on. And he was like getting naked almost. And I'm putting the groceries away. Well, it comes time to cook. I come and I put him up on the counter right beside me. My wife's working somewhere. Yeah, she's got a couple kids. I've got him, and I start cooking. So I put the olive oil in the pan, and he takes the butter. He puts the butter in there. It's kind of sizzling. And then he's like, I put meat in? I was like, no, I'm going to do the meat because it's a little dangerous. And I dumped the meat in there, but then the oil just like exploded, just all over. And he didn't have a shirt on, just all over him. I'm not a good dad. Right, like it was like all he started screaming, he started crying, and I am now freaking out. Right, I am texting my wife. I'm like, you've got to come home right now. Got to come. Jeremiah's burnt. Now you got to come. And my other son's in there. He's trying to help me. I'm telling him how to cook dinner because when you got a family as big as mine, like you don't just sacrifice dinner to help someone who's wounded because that's a lot of money. And so I'm like, cook the meat, stir it, keep stirring it. Well, I'm like wetting the other kid's chest and I'm like putting paper towels on him and trying to figure out what to do. When my wife gets home, the whole time this kid's been screaming, crying his eyes out, my wife gets home, she picks him up, and what do you think he does? He just lays down on her and just stops crying. We did take him to stat care, just so you don't call DCF on me, but we got him taken care of. But like my wife is like a calming factor in my children's lives. I don't know if it's this way with anybody else, but like my wife calms the babies. I get them crazy. Like even when my seven-year-old son was a baby, my wife would pick him up to put him to sleep. She would pick him up, pat his butt a couple times. His eyes would roll in the back of his head. He'd be like, oh, and just fall asleep. I'd pick him up. He'd look me dead in the eyes and be like, like he thought it was fun time or something. Look, my wife brought calm. I brought chaos to sleeping babies. It's just kind of the way it is, and that's fine. Some people bring calm. Some people bring chaos. The question is, are you bringing calm or chaos to your house, to your life, to your work, wherever you are? Because every single one of you in this room, I promise you this, you're either bringing calm or you're bringing chaos with you wherever you go this week. Wherever you were last week, you brought calm or you brought chaos. You know, when there was a bill that you couldn't pay, when finances were tight, when a relationship starts falling apart, when your kids' sports team starts fighting with each other, when your coworkers manipulate people, your boss is a jerk, when you got haters lying about you, when there's a health crisis, you're either going to be calm or you're going to be chaotic. You're bringing chaos, and it's good to write this down, okay? Am I bringing calm or am I bringing chaos? And if I want to bring calm, how do I do it? But this is an important question because there's a little fact that I think we would all agree with. Let's go ahead and read this. Go ahead and put it on the screen. Nobody in the history of the world has ever calmed down after being told to calm down. If you agree with that, just say, calm down, Jeff. Right? No, right? No one actually, if they're freaking out, if someone's scared and you say, just calm down, all right? They never go, oh, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I should just calm down, right? Like, that's not how it works. And so the danger is, after today, during the sermon, we're going to talk about being calm in the midst of chaos and how you can be calm even when your life's falling apart. The danger is you're going to go home and go, I just need to be calmer. But that's not going to work, is it? Because you're going to go home, I just need to be calmer. And on your way home today, you're going to get a flat tire. You're going to step outside of your car, and someone's going to drive within 3 feet of you, and you are going to lose your calm. So today, this is important, because you're going to experience that hurricane, and you're going to feel ripped apart by the wind, or you're going to learn how God works in these situations, and you're going to be able to be the calm in the storm for the people around you and for yourself. If you would grab your Bible and turn to the book of Nehemiah, we're going to read his life story today. Not the whole thing, but a chunk of it. Nehemiah was a guy in the nation of Israel or Judah, and He, at this time, this is 445 BC, okay? So it's a long time ago. At this time, the nation of Israel or Judah, they weren't completely in control of their own land, okay? They had been in captivity to Babylon and Persia for 70 years, okay? So hear this. For 70 years, they were slaves. They had gotten out of captivity. And now I wouldn't say that they were friendly with Persia, but they weren't enemies with Persia. There were tensions, you know, kind of like between us and Canada. I'm just kidding, right? There were just tensions there. They didn't like each other, but they didn't hate each other. And so we're going to pick up this story about this guy named Nehemiah who finds himself all alone in the midst of chaos. And we're going to see what he does. Let's check this out. Chapter 1, verse 1 to 3. So if you're on the right page, page 383, you're going to find that big number 1. That's the chapter number. And we're going to start right there. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, in the month of Kislev in the 20th year. Okay, that's all just reference. While I was in the city of Susa. Okay, so he's not in his hometown. Hananiah, one of my brothers, came from Judah. That's his country. With some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. Okay, right? They're out of slavery. They survived the exile. He's like, how are things going back home? They said to me, those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. Would you say great trouble and disgrace? Those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. Why? He says the wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. Okay, let's write this down. You can see it on your line. We're going to write some stuff down here, but it says the walls of Jerusalem were broken down. Okay, this is the first thing we got to get in our brains. Why is this a big deal? Because the walls around a city at that time were all about prestige. If your walls were broken down, you were losers. Right? You weren't powerful. People didn't care anymore. You were open and exposed to your enemies. They could just march their army right into Jerusalem and destroy you. It was all about safety. When you came in town at night and they closed the city gate, the bandits, the hordes, the raiders couldn't come in and steal from you anymore. This was also Jerusalem, known as the city of David. King David was the most famous king of all Israel. This was his town. Right? It was their capital. This is the town. I want you to think about the town that you love the most. Right? And it's just no more respect, no more pride. It's not safe there anymore. Like, you would feel bad about that place. In fact, one more thing about Jerusalem is super important. This is where the temple of God was. So for them, this was the place God dwelled on earth. The temple was there. If you're interested in history, this is the second temple time. And people could just come in and destroy the temple, steal from the temple. And so this was an insult to God. This was an insult to them. And they were broken down. So what did Nehemiah do? What did he feel? What did he think? Look at verse 4. When I heard these things, I sat down and I wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Right? The dude's crying. Right? He's sad. Let's write this down. The walls of Jerusalem were broken down. This deeply affected Nehemiah emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. This was a major problem for God's people, their land, the temple. Right, the dude cried, he wept, right? We're talking about times in our life when we feel like everything's falling apart. How can we be calm? Well, Nehemiah's life was falling apart. His hometown, his pride, the temple of God, all in danger. He wept. He says he mourned for a couple days. This wasn't some wuss, okay? This isn't some just stupid guy who's super emotional that you would make fun of. You'll find out later, he was strong, he was influential, like he was powerful. But this messed with him. Guys, I know you're powerful, you're strong, but you ever been in a moment where it hits you hard? You feel like falling apart, right? This was him. So what does he do? He's falling apart. Look at chapter 1, verses 5 to 10. Then I said, Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God, he's praying, right? Who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keeps his commandments. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes be open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. Now listen to this part. I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's family, have committed against you. He's probably got some specific sins in mind, right? He's like, I know I stole a granola bar from the dude on 4th Street. I don't know if there was a 4th Street over there. We have acted very wickedly towards you. We have not obeyed the commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses. Remember the instruction you gave your servant Moses, saying, if you're unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, then even your exiled people are from the farthest horizon. I will gather them from there, bring them to the place I've chosen as a dwelling to my name. Okay, in other words, he's praying, right? He's in the middle of chaos. He's crying. He's mourning. Most people would be mad. They'd be angry. They'd feel lost. They'd want to quit. They wouldn't know what to do. But Nehemiah, let's write it down. Nehemiah connected with God. Okay, he prayed. I'd love for you to circle the word connected. And then I would love for you to shout out the word connected. I'm going to read this one more time. Ready? Nehemiah connected with God by praying. Okay, even though he's alone, he's going to God, so he's not alone. And he starts with, just think about his prayer there. He starts by praising God. Then he asks God to listen. He's like, God, you're amazing. God, please listen to me. But then this is huge. Nehemiah recognizes one of the problems is that he's a sinner. He recognizes one of the problems that he's a sinner. Got any sinners in here today? What happens is sometimes we go through trouble and we want to come to God and we want God to fix our problems, but before we want God to fix our problems, before we ask him to fix our problems, we need to connect with him and confess, let's write this down, our sin. Nehemiah connected with God, in other words, he prayed, including confession. You can write that down, including confession. All right, Nehemiah connected with God. We'll get that on the screen anytime. There we go. If you want to be calm in chaos, you have to connect with God. But when you connect with God, you have to confess your crimes, your sins, how you've offended God. I want you to imagine for a moment. Imagine that you take a dozen eggs, you go outside, and you start chucking them at your neighbor's house. Okay, you just light up the whole side of the house. It's on his windows. It's like the neighbor's looking at you, and you just drill the window. And they're just like, ah! And you're like, sucker, take it. And you just keep like a dozen eggs all over their house. A week later, you're making cookies, and you run out of eggs. So you go to your neighbor, you're like, hey, can I borrow some eggs? I'm making some good. What's your neighbor going to say? No. What's wrong with you? I'm not giving you eggs, right? What? That doesn't work. What happens is we come to God. We are doing things that insult God and asking him to bless us in the middle of it. And that don't work, does it? So when we come to God, when we connect with God, we have to confess our sins, right? God, here's what I've done wrong. Here's what I want you to help me change. All right, get that out of the way. Clear the air with God. Look at verses 10 and 11. This is chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. He's still praying. He says, they're your servants, your people. You redeem them by your great strength, your mighty hand. Lord, let your ear be attentive, right? He's asking God to listen. Let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this, your servant, and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. In other words, God, we respect you. Listen to us. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. I was cupbearer to the king. What's that mean? He says, God, I'm going to go talk to the king. I need help right now. Let's write this down. Nehemiah connected with God. He prayed, including confession, and then he asked for God's help. Right? This guy was cupbearer to the king of Persia. This is King Artaxerxes. Now, cupbearer doesn't sound like it's a big deal, but not only did the cupbearer bring wine, often cupbearers back then were in charge of the king's harem. So as far as the king was concerned, this is a really important guy. So this is a big job. Also, these guys were often in charge of the city's finances. So he was maybe the treasurer for Persia. So this is a big job. This is a big deal. And Nehemiah says, God, I'm going to ask this king for help. You need to help me, God. Again, most people would freak out, right? The walls are broken down. My life's ruined. Everything sucks. I'm tired of this. I don't want to get off the couch. Nehemiah says, I wept. I mourned. It was terrible. But then he says, help me, God. Follow me? Help me, God, in the middle of this. Then look what he does, chapter 2, verse 1 to 5. In the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought to him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. Hey, we could actually do a whole sermon about how we do our jobs right there from that one. He'd never been sad in the presence of his boss before, ever. That's interesting. I had not been sad in the presence of the king before. So he asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid. Why was he afraid? He's going to ask the king for help. If you ask the king for something the king doesn't want to do, the king can, right? This is a big deal. He could lose his life right here. But he's also scared because he needs his hometown to get fixed and taken care of. And what if the king says no? He's going to ask the king for help, and he's scared. "But I said to the king, 'May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates destroyed by fire?'" The king knows he's going to ask. So the king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king. I love this. I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered. Right? He didn't get down and have a prayer meeting. This is what I like to call arrow prayers, right? He's like right there with the king, having the discussion. Then he's like, "God help me. Okay, here's what I want, king." Right? Just, boom, boom. He just shoots an arrow prayer up. "God, I need your help right now." And then he starts talking to the king. Okay. Then I prayed and talked to the king. "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it." He asked. He did it. He did the thing he was scared to do. Hear that? He did the thing he was scared to do. Let's write this down. Nehemiah took the next right step by asking the king for help and time off. It's where he was, and he used the resources he had available to him. Right? He had a king right there, so he did what he could with what he had. I want you to circle, took the next right step. Nobody else could do this, just Nehemiah. He was alone. There was no one else that could bend the king's ear. But here we see the two steps to being calm in chaos. Connect with God. Take the next right step. When the world starts going hurricane on you, when your life starts falling apart, connect with God, take the next right step. I don't want anyone else to walk out of here today and just think, okay, so what I learned today was that I need to be calm and I just need to do the next right thing, because that's not what we said. That's not what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah didn't go, "I just need to stop freaking out and do the next right thing." What did he do? He connected with God and then he did the next right thing. You follow me? Give me a nod if you follow me, right? Two important steps. Nehemiah had not connected with anyone in Jerusalem yet. He didn't get architects to draw up schematics about the wall. He just did the next thing that he knew he needed to do, and that was connect with God and then ask the king for help. How many times when your life goes sideways are you thinking about a million things that you got to get straight to try to work everything out? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually when your life starts to fall apart, you're never like, "Oh, I can't pay one bill." You know, only one bill, it's not that big of a deal. It's like, "I can't pay this one bill, and if I don't pay this one, then I can't get daycare for the kids, and they don't go to daycare, they're not going to make it to school in time, they don't go to school, they're going to fail, and then they're going to take the kids away from me, and then I'm going to..." You know what I'm talking about? I don't have experience with that or anything. But we tend to blow up, to lose it. And we think about a million things instead of just, what's the next thing I gotta do, right? It's like my kids eat dessert before their vegetables and I'm like, "Oh no, they're gonna weigh 900 pounds someday." Now look, their kids, just make them eat a vegetable, right? You can't pay one bill and you're like, "Oh no, I'm gonna lose my house." And you look, just get a job, just ask for more hours. You know, just take, what's the one thing you can do next? Connect with God. Take the next right step. You feel all alone. You feel scared. You're worried. You're worried about 1,000 things, but just connect with God. Then take the next right step. This is what Nehemiah does. You're going to see it again and again. Look at chapter 2. Look at verses 6 to 9. "Then the king with the queen sitting beside him asked me, 'How long will your journey take and when will you get back?' It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him," I love this, "'If it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of the Trans-Euphrates so they'll provide me with safe conduct till I arrive in Judah." Or he's asking the king to give him safe passage. "And may I have a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall, and for the residence I will occupy," that's his house, And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my request. So I went to the governor of the Trans-Euphrates and gave him the king's letters. The king also sent army officers and cavalry with me. He gets what he needed. Why? We would say, but he's got political connections. He got what he wanted because he knew the king and it's all political and everybody who has connections gets what they need, but I never get what I need. I don't know why I sound like I'm from South Park there, but like we always complain, other people have better connect. Listen, this was dangerous from me, okay? This guy was going to the king of Persia who for 70 years had his people in slavery. This wasn't his BFF. This king could have killed, to say the least, there were tensions between the two. Like they had a common enemy at this point, but there were still tensions. And although they didn't hate each other, this was dangerous. The king could have killed Nehemiah just for asking. And did you notice what Nehemiah said? Why did it work out? He said, because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request. Because my God, he said. Because my God, you see that? He says, I did what I was supposed to do. I connected with God. I took the next right step. And because my God was on me, I was able to do that. All right, check it out. This is something we say a lot. We study the book of Ruth, you'll find this. You study the book of Nehemiah, you'll find this. You go through all scripture, you'll find this premise and this idea. Write it down. I'll work hard, but God works it out. I'll work hard, but God works it out, okay? Why can he be calm in the middle of disaster? He says, because my God, right? He connected with God. He took the next right step. Listen, I want you to answer this question for me. Here's the question. Did God require him to take the next right step? No. Come on. No, think about this. If he had not done anything, would have God helped him? No. So, would God require him to do the next right thing? The answer is yes. God expects Nehemiah to do the next right thing. Does God expect you to do the next right thing? Yes. He expects you to do that. It is you who is supposed to do the work, but it is God who works it out. You are supposed to do the work, but God works it out. You know that even if you make that next right step, there's still 1,000 things it'd have to fall into place for everything to work right. You can't just go, okay, I'm gonna try to fix my life. I'm gonna take this one step and then everything's gonna be better. You know that's not the case. But you know when you take that next step, unless God is there and putting some of those puzzle pieces together, it's not gonna work. Give me a nod if you're following me. Right? You work hard, but then you trust that God's going to work it out. This is why you don't just take the next right step. This is why you connect with God first, and then you take the next right step. Look at chapter 2, verse 10. When Sambalay the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official, these are enemies of his, heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. Man. When you take the next right step, it will disturb some people. You hear me? You aren't going to take a right step, and everybody around you is going to go, very good. I'm so happy for you. No, you're going to make the right step, and some people are going to be disturbed by that fact. Look at verses 11 and 12. I went to Jerusalem. Okay, so he goes to the city. And after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding on. He goes around and he surveys the whole city. I love the calmness of this. He goes there, he's like, hey, so I came to the town, I hung out for a few days. I didn't tell anybody why I was there. Didn't tell anybody. But you gotta imagine, he came with an army, right? The king sent an army with him, a cavalry. And he came with enough wood to rebuild the entire city walls, his own house, and gates by the temple. So he marches in with an army and trucks load of material, and he just strolls into the city. Everyone's looking. He didn't say nothing. He's like, what's up? Also, what's going on? Nothing. He's just calm. So he goes out, he surveys the city. I want you to notice what he didn't do. And this is sometimes what we do. We're like, okay, I need to get my life right. He doesn't come into the town. Hey, everybody, we're going to fix this town. I need 100 volunteers. Come on, we can do it. That's not what he does, is it? He's not trying to be a hype man. He's not trying to get everybody together. He's not trying to like get himself all psyched up. He's just looking, surveying the town, not freaking out, because he's trying to figure out what the next right step is. And why can he be so calm? Because he knows he's going to do the next right thing. There's going to be some hard work, but he knows God's going to work it out. Look at chapter 2, verse 17 and 18. He finally takes the information to the people. Then I said to them, hey, you see the trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins. Its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. We will no longer be in disgrace. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. And they replied, let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. What's he doing? He's telling the people about God. He's connecting them back to God. He's saying, guys, I came here to rebuild the wall, but you wouldn't believe what happened. I went to the king, right? And we know the king doesn't like us that much, but I went there and I was like, God, you got to help me. And because God helped us, you know what the king did? See all this wood? The king gave us that for free. I don't know if he did a little thing or not, but... Right, he was telling people what God did and how God was involved. Let's write this down. After Nehemiah surveyed the town, he connected the people with God. Then they did the next right thing and began to work in the wall. It's like so simple. He's like, guys, God is in this. He connects them back to God, reminds them who God is. Then they get to work. I want you to circle connected. Then circle the next right thing. Anyone seeing a pattern here? They all saw the problem. I mean, everybody in Jerusalem saw the problem. They all knew the walls were falling down. But it was too much for anyone to deal with. So Nehemiah connects them back to God. Then they just do the next right step. Let's just start building the wall. Look at verses 19 to 20. Everything doesn't go quite as planned. Chapter 2, verse 19 to 20. But when Sambalay the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. What is this you're doing? They asked. Are you rebelling against the king? I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But out of you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it. All right, see what's happening here? They're trying psychological warfare. Oh, you're going against the king. They're trying to make it sound like a bigger deal than it really is. They're telling lies. They're gossiping about it. Where is Nehemiah's head right now? I mean, just look at his answer to them. Where is his head getting involved in the fight the enemy wants to bring? No. I was at a parenting seminar one time, and I love it. One of the guys said there that your kids are going to try to fight with you. And he said, but you don't have to attend every fight you're invited to. I was like, that's awesome. Nehemiah's head was not going to get, he was not going to attend this fight, even though he's invited. His head is with God, right? He says, hey, the God of heaven is with us. He's like, I don't got to worry about that, guys. He just goes back to work on the wall. Again, he connects with God, and he goes to work on the wall. Chapter 3, we're going to skip it because this is just about the work that they're doing. He's calm in the middle of these broken walls. He's working. God is working it out. But then the enemy shows back up. Look at chapter 4. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews. And in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, with their building, even a fox climbing upon it would break down their wall of stones. Nehemiah's got haters, liars, insults. Listen, doing the will of God always attracts haters. You hear me? There's a promise in the Bible that not many people claim, but it's real. Check this out, 2 Timothy. Everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. When you're trying to do what's right, you will be persecuted if you're doing this for Jesus Christ. And no, I'm not talking about when you got pulled over by the cops and there was some weed in your pocket, so you had to go to jail. That's not being persecuted. Right? Give me a nod if you understand that. Okay. That's not being persecuted. That's going to jail because you broke the law. being persecuted is when you get away from people who are doing the wrong thing, you do the right thing, and then they don't like you because of it. You hear me? Everyone who tries to do what Jesus wants them to do will be persecuted. Listen, if you think you're a Jesus follower and you have never been persecuted for doing what Jesus wants you to do, maybe you should question whether or not you're actually a Jesus follower. Because this verse right here tells us everyone who does what Jesus wants them to do will be persecuted. Not everyone who's a nice American who does what you're supposed to do because you're a decent person. No, those people aren't persecuted. You're persecuted when you follow Jesus. Listen, this is important. Chaos isn't the result of bad people doing bad things in your life. Chaos is the result of you, even though you're a godly follower of Jesus, crumbling because bad people did bad things in your life. I'm going to say that again. I don't want you to miss this. Chaos in your life doesn't happen because bad people do bad things to you. Chaos happens in your life because you crumbled when bad people did bad things in your life. I'll give you an example. Chaos in your house doesn't happen because the three-year-old throws a temper tantrum. Chaos happens in your house when the three-year-old throws a temper tantrum, so the adult throws one too. You know what I mean? Chaos at your work doesn't happen because your boss is a jerk. No. Chaos happens at your work because your boss is a jerk and you let it ruin your day. Chaos happens not because bad people do bad things, but because good people crumble when bad people do bad things instead of connecting with God and doing the right thing. Three-year-olds gonna be three-year-olds. Bad guys gonna be bad guys. Your boss is gonna be a jerk. That's what happens in life. You're gonna be persecuted just like Nehemiah when you try to do the next right thing. But we work hard. We let God work it out. We don't crumble. We connect with God and we do the next right thing. We connect with God and we do the next right thing. And in here somewhere, before, after, in between, we connect with God. Before, after, in between, we're doing the right thing. People are going to come and hate you and persecute you, say you're going to fail, try to ruin you. But Nehemiah, when he's attacked by his enemies, what do you think Nehemiah does? What's his pattern so far? So the enemies come and they attack him. So what do you think Nehemiah is going to do now? Look at chapter 4, verse 4. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own. He goes to God, right? He's connecting with God. He's attacked by his enemies, so he connects with God. Hear us, O God, we're despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. He's a little mad. Give them over as plunder and a lamb of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight. For they have thrown insults in the face of the builders. He sounds a little angry. He's a little mad. But I want you to notice, he doesn't quit, does he? He doesn't walk away. He doesn't give up. Let's write this down. When facing enemies, Nehemiah connected with God first. He prayed. When you're that angry, you can approach your enemy and you can be like, I'm going to kick your... Or you can approach God and be like, you got to do something about this, even when you're mad. He didn't get into a fight. He didn't lose his cool. He didn't quit. He was calm because he connected with God. He let God do what God was supposed to do. He focused on his stuff. I bet you don't know what happened next. He connected with God. And verse 6, so we rebuilt the wall till it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. Let's write it down. When facing enemies, Nehemiah connected with God first, then he took the next right step. Boom, you're catching on, right? This is how it goes. He connects with God, something bad happened, he just takes the next right step, something bad happens, he reconnects with God. Look at chapter 4, verse 7 to 9. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the people of Ashdod heard the repairs of Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead, that the gaps were being closed, and they were very angry, they plotted together, came to fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard and day and night to meet this threat. Okay, so the enemies come again. They increase the potential attacks. It's a bigger deal. So again, connection, next right thing. I love this verse. He says, you should really memorize this verse because it's so helpful. It says, we prayed to God and posted a guard. We prayed to God and posted a guard, right? I connect with God. I put this in God's hands, but then I take the next right step. I'm going to work hard. I'm just going to trust that God's going to work it out. Right? He doesn't stop everything. He doesn't gather an army together. He doesn't try to do crazy stuff. Actually, someone texted in and asked a question. What if building an army is the next right thing? It wasn't for Nehemiah at the beginning. Nehemiah didn't hear that his walls had fallen down and went, oh man, well, why? I better get an army together because someone might attack us while we're in the middle of the... No, the next right thing for him was ask the king if he could go fix it. Then the next right thing was to go there. And then the next right thing was to actually pick up a rock and put it on top of another rock and start to build the wall. Then the enemies came, and now it's time for him to get a guard out there. They're going to bring more enemies. And then he's gonna, if you read on, not what we're going to do today, but he'll get more people with weapons together because he keeps taking the next right step. There may be a time in Scripture when this happens. For us as followers of Jesus Christ, we're told to turn the other cheek. He was protecting the city of God. The city of God is a spiritual place right now for us. It's not an actual city on earth. The next right step for us when enemy attacks is to turn the other cheek. Or to go to a different place. Someone says, how do you connect with God when he's so amazing? Is it as simple as praying? Yeah, when we get to practical application at the end, I'll give you some suggestions, but one of the things is that to connect with God, you have to know God. I love to connect with my wife, but I had to ask her on a first date, and a second one, the third one. Eventually, I had to like shut up and listen so I could learn what she cared about. If you want to know God, you're going to have to read the Bible. You're going to have to study it. Right? That's just reality. All right, let's go back to where we were. So he posts a guard. He connects with God. He takes the next right step. But it's not just enemies that attack him. Check out chapter 4, verses 10 to 12. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the labor, so this is his own people. The strength of the laborers is giving out. There's so much rubble. We can't rebuild the wall. Also, our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we'll be right there among them and we'll kill them and put an end to their work. Then the Jews, his own people, who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they'll attack us. So they're freaking out. 10 times over, they're saying this stuff. They want to quit. They're tired of working. They're spreading rumors about what the enemy's going to do. I don't have to tell you all that when an enemy attacks you, it hurts. But when someone who is close to you turns their back on you, it's way worse, isn't it? And here Nehemiah got all these people that were on his side turning their back on him. This is deep pain. This is the series called Alone, right? This is his moment of being alone. He's in deep pain. He's got enemies on the outside. He's got enemies on the inside. So Nehemiah quits. No, he doesn't quit. He freaks out on everybody. It's crazy. Is that what he did? No. Look at verse 13 to 15. Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles and the officials and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord. Okay, remember the Lord. Will you say remember the Lord with me? Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your families, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to our own work. This time he connects the people with God, not by praying, but by teaching them and reminding them of who God is. He gets them all together. He says, our God is great. Remember, Lord, our God is awesome. These aren't cliches. Like he's actually saying, guys, don't you remember when God got us out of slavery 100 years ago? Don't you remember when we had nothing to build a wall with and this king that didn't even barely like us gave us all the supplies for free? Remember how amazing God is. He's connecting people's hearts back to God. Let's write it down. When his own people turn on him, Nehemiah connects them back to God and they all get back to work on the next right thing. Again, connection with God, doing the next right thing. They're going to work hard and wait for God to work it out. But here's what you need to remember. Haters are always going to hate. And they're going to hate when you do right. And they're going to hate it when you do good. But you can be a calm in the middle of a storm instead of engaging the fight with them. People on your side will also quit. And they'll walk away from the fight and leave you alone. And you will feel alone. Nehemiah felt alone. But as followers of Jesus, we have a great and awesome God who's with us. When we work, he works it out. I want you to remember the quote at the very beginning, okay? We said, no one in the history of the world has ever calmed down by being told to calm down, right? What we do in the midst of chaos is not just tell ourselves, I just need to chill out, man. I just need to calm the heck down. No, no. When storm comes and you're alone, you need to connect with Jesus Christ. Connection with Jesus Christ. And then, and only then, you need to take the next right step. Not the next 100,000 plans, but the next right step. So here's our practical application. Nehemiah knew God well enough to know how to pray and what he could trust God for. And so I have to know God's words. That's the Bible well. So I know how to connect with him and what to expect from him, right? You want to connect with God, but if you don't know God, you're not going to know how to connect with him. Nehemiah knew that he could ask God for the supplies to build Jerusalem because he knew God wanted that to be built. You have to know God before you can connect with God. This is why we study the Bible so deeply. This is why we preach on it every week. This is why I encourage people to read it every single day. Get the Bible app, YouVersion, on your phone. Start in the book of Matthew. Just get to know who God is. Next, Nehemiah knew where God's responsibilities began and his ended. So I need to recognize the difference between what I can do and what I need God to do. This is a theme. We didn't talk about a whole bunch of it, but I want you to recognize this in his life. Nehemiah knew the difference between Nehemiah's responsibilities and God's responsibilities, right? So when he was mad at his enemies, he was ticked off at them and he wanted to judge them and hate them. He's like, that's not my job. So he just prayed, God, you take care of those guys. So he said, this is not my job. That's God's job. I'm going to let God do God's job and I'm going to do my job. Nehemiah went to the king because that was Nehemiah's job, to actually do some of the work, to ask for help. But it wasn't Nehemiah's job to change the king's heart. That was God's job. So Nehemiah shot an arrow prayer, God help right now. And God changed the king's heart, right? Nehemiah knew what his responsibilities were and the difference between his responsibilities and God's responsibilities. Way, 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 way too often, you're trying to step in and do what only God can do. You hear me? You're trying to change people's hearts. You're trying to make miracles happen, but you're not a miracle worker, are you? You're a human being who just tries to take the next right step and sometimes screws it up on that, right? So we don't try to make miracles happen. We don't try to fix someone's heart. We just do the next right step and we let God do that stuff. Let God do God's job and we do our job, okay? Finally, this last one. Nehemiah kept his head focused on the right things instead of obsessing about the wrong things. He had kept his head focused, right? He kept connecting with God even when enemies came, even when people turned their back on him. How many times when someone has a relationship problem, for instance, do they obsess about what is wrong instead of focusing on God and what is right? You hear me? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like they have a relationship problem, so they stay up at night. Oh, does she still care about me? What will people think if we break up? Why does everything go wrong? And like they obsess about what's wrong instead of thinking about what is right and obsessing about what God wants me to do. Right? Maybe you should be thinking, I wonder if there's a counselor. Which counselor should I go to? What's a Bible verse I can memorize in this situation? Praying, God, I need you to step in. Connect with God and do the next right thing. All right, I'm gonna pray and then we'll get out of here. God, thank you so much for loving us. Thank you for helping us through this, these hard times that we face. I pray that next time we face hurricanes, storms in our life, you'll help us to not just want to calm down, but to connect with you, to know and do what the next right thing is. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, God bless.